acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet this morning, and I'd like to pay respect to their elders past and present and also extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians who are present here this morning. Just a reminder to the members of the public in the gallery, under our standing orders, there are some requirements, such as that all public present at the meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present, be suitably dressed and turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for such period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Leave of absence, councillors. We do have an apology for Councillor Tolte. And we just need to have a mover and seconder that an apology be noted for Councillor Julie Tolte, Division 6 Councillor, and that permission be granted for Councillor Tolte to take part in the general meeting by teleconferencing. Move Councillor Beard, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously, and obviously Councillor Elliott is absent. Okay, on to our devotional segment. I'd like to ask a member of the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, Stephen Rothery from Cleveland Uniting Church, to lead the council in a brief devotional segment. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I'll open with a scripture reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 12, 41 to 44. Jesus sat down opposite the temple treasury and he watched the crowds putting money into the treasury. Many rich people came and put in large sums, and then a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which were only worth a penny. Then he called to his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more in today than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance and wealth, but she gave out of her poverty and has put everything she had, all that she had to live on." I brought something with me today, which is a bit nerdy and high-tech. Some of you might know what it is. This is an Oculus Rift. It's a virtual reality headset. And they're coming out, probably hitting the main market in the middle of early next year. I'm a nerd, so I've got the development kit. And if you haven't experienced it, it's truly amazing. You know, Star Trek holodeck level stuff. It's incredible. So you sort of strap that onto your head. There's a screen in there, and it's great. But one of the reasons why I brought this, and when I was reading this passage, I was reflecting about that, was that virtual reality makes you incredibly aware of how selective our human perception is. When you're doing certain experiences in virtual reality and experiencing things from another perspective which would otherwise be impossible for you to experience before, you become very aware of the things that are before you that perhaps you'd never noticed before, and the things that your brain does a really good job of just filtering out, the things that are literally in front of you that you cannot see. You might see them with your eyes, but your brain just ignores it entirely. And it was reminding me of the way that our perception is often shaped by what we're expecting to see and what we're choosing to value. In the Gospels, Jesus talked a lot about the kingdom of God. And when he was sharing with his disciples about this, he wasn't just talking about some distant hope that they had in the future, but rather, Jesus often was drawing attention to things in the world around them, pointing things out and telling his disciples that this kingdom of God is actually something that's happening here and now. And it was a present reality, if only people would bother to see it. This passage we have today is Jesus calling his disciples aside just to stop and just to notice and to watch and to appreciate something that was so simple and so ordinary, something that would have happened many times throughout the day in the temple, where people would come, they would give an offering, and they would leave. And I think what's the most interesting in this passage is Jesus is drawing attention to and highlighting the virtue of an action from one that was so seemingly insignificant, that was done by a person who was not seeking to draw attention to themselves, and who also would have probably seen themselves as quite insignificant. The contribution and donation of this poor widow is one that would not probably have even been noticed by the people keeping the books if it had or hadn't happened. Yet Jesus is emphasising that this gift that she offered was perhaps the most important of all. You see, it seems to me that as we read the Gospels, Jesus does a very good job of drawing attention to those things which the religious leaders in his time had chosen to overlook, and things that they'd become so good at overlooking they didn't even realise they were doing it. That the things that are around us that are the hardest to notice and to see are those things that have just become invisible because we've chosen to ignore them for so long. But we're reminded that actually, in this instance in particular, the things that we notice and the things that we don't aren't always what matters to God and what God wants us to see and notice. We are reminded that virtue, courage, sacrifice, generosity, these things aren't measured in absolute terms by the quantity of something that is given, but rather they are things that should be measured by the cost of the one who gave them. It seems to me one of the challenges in leadership in any organisation, large or small, is that it can become increasingly difficult to notice and to value the contributions of those that otherwise are small and insignificant in the grand scheme of things. That unless we remain grounded, to have the humility, the willingness to learn, to recognise virtue in and to value the service of those who seem unimportant, we can actually stop seeing it. And I think that is a challenge for all of us, no matter what your job is or where you work. I used to work in the city, and I can tell you now, the people I walked past every day who were begging in the street, they were invisible to me. I did not even see them. And so may we make an effort to see the world as Jesus saw it. Can we be aware of how we see the world and make an effort to see past hype and status and wealth and power and to see what really matters in the eyes of God? Can we take the time to see people, situations and injustices that can so easily and so comfortably drift into invisibility? I invite you to join me as we pray. God, we thank you for those who offer leadership and support in our local community. And God, we ask that you would continue to lead and guide both them and us so that our community can be one of justice, of love and compassion. That our community can be one where we choose to take the time to see those things that are unpleasant to see, to engage and to learn from those who are so unassuming and insignificant, and that we can recognise the justice, virtues, love and compassion and generosity of those who exemplify it even when they are the ones who need it the most. So God, lead and guide our leaders as they sit and discuss the matters of this community. In Christ's name we ask this prayer. Amen.
Leave that around for us nerds here if you like.
Not today.
Could do with a bit of virtual reality in here.
Sorry about that.
Okay, councillors, the next item on the agenda is recognition of achievement. I haven't been advised of any presentations on that item. Okay, move on to item 5.1, which is the general meeting minutes, the 21st of October 2015. Can we have a mover and seconder that the minutes of the general meeting held on the 21st of October 2015 be confirmed? Moved, Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Edwards. No items of correctness, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against?
So it's Julie to say aye.
Yeah, I'll get Councillor Tolchi, if you could just say aye when I ask for the vote.
Okay, I'm an aye, thank you.
Okay, so that is unanimous, councillors. All right, moving on to matters outstanding for minutes of previous general meeting. I'll ask the Chief Executive Officer to present.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. There is item 6.1, which is the local laws amendment, which was presented at the general meeting of the 7th of October. That continues to lie on the table and will be discussed today in agenda item 11.1.1.
Thank you, CEO. Moving on to public participation. Now, I'm not quite sure if we've had anyone in the public gallery that wants to address council today. We haven't been advised formally, so that there isn't anyone. Okay, council, so there's no need for us to move into public participation in that case. Next item is petitions and presentations. Councillors, I haven't been advised of any petitions or presentations. So we'll get to the order of business then, which I'll ask if there's a motion that we alter the order of business at this point in time. There being none, remind you of your material, personal interest and conflict of interest under the Local Government Act 2009. Councillors, your summary of those responsibilities is in your agenda. And that'll take us then to 11.1, which is the local law amendment. Now, Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have an amended motion to present, and that is that the matter lay on the table to enable a further workshop with councillors to resolve questions on the boundaries.
So that means we don't actually need a motion, as it's actually just remaining on the table. Is that correct, Nick? Through to you, the General Manager of Organisational Services.
Madam Mayor, my understanding from being approached from one of the councillors this morning is that probably the cleanest way of doing it is to have a motion to bring the item off the table, because my understanding was that the new procedural motion would be for the matter to lie on the table until after the next election. That would then clarify to officers what the intent of the council is.
Okay, well, my understanding was that there was issues with the conversion of discussion into maps, and hence they wanted some clarity. I don't know if the timing of that matters, but I understand as our discussions yesterday, Nick, that it probably would mean it wouldn't come back until after the election. It's not that it has to be after the election, it's just that it wouldn't be time for that to happen.
Madam Mayor, I don't have any issue with it. I mean, it's asking simply for a workshop, and I can't imagine that would take very long. It's just, as you said, a disconnect between the expectations of some of the councillors with regard to the mapping. And I have no issue with that. That could be done within a week.
Okay, so just to be clear, we haven't actually got a motion on the books at this point in time. We've got a procedural motion that the matter remain on the table, that lie on the table. I didn't hear Councillor Beard say
and
we're taking it off
the table. And that we enable a further workshop.
Okay, well that's... I'm not sure that actually cuts it when you add a procedural motion
probably
to another workshop.
Well, let's just say the workshop is implied, but it doesn't need to be part of the motion. Just let it lay on the table.
So, councillors, that's a procedural motion which doesn't require a seconder. I'll put the motion. Those in favour. Well, it's a procedural motion. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're not debating the issue. We've been given the reasons. We have an opportunity to debate the issue in future once we've had that clarity. I'll allow a question, Councillor Ogilvie.
I've got one in here, which is the regulated parking area in Stradbroke Ferries, which would absolutely preferably be cleaned up by Christmas time so that parking can be regulated for the Christmas flow. So it's really important that the advice on whether we can turn this around workshop in 2 weeks. That's important to me before I vote on this.
Is that possible, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there you go. Councillors, you happy with that? Yep, okay.
Madam Mayor, can we separate those two issues?
Well, to do that, councillors, I think doing that on the run now, it'll just be, it's probably cleaner for us just to bring it back to the next meeting. Yeah. Is that okay, Councillor Tolte?
Yes, I didn't mean now. I just thought it would be better if the officers separated when they brought it back anyway.
Sorry, I don't know. Well, we can have that discussion at the workshop.
Okay.
All right, it's a procedural motion. I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Okay, so those in favour, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Williams, those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett and Councillor Boglari. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to the next item, councillors, is 11.1.2. I'll ask Councillor Beard to present that.
Madam Mayor, I would like to move the officer's recommendation with regard to item 11.1.2, the Operational Plan Quarterly Performance Report. And that is, Council resolves to note the Quarterly Operational Plan Performance Report for September 2015 and approves the changes to the Operational Plan 2015 listed in the report, and they're listed on page 12.
Moved Councillor Beard, seconded Councillor Edwards. Councillor Beard.
Madam Mayor, the Operational Plan reports on 82 items, 67 of which are on track, 5 are completed, 8 are being monitored and 2 are of concern. The councillors have the report before them. My question would be with regard to the Activity 3 on page 12, Activity 1.1.12, where it says council maintain council owned water bodies, amended to monitor council owned water bodies. Could I just get an explanation from one of the senior managers as to how or why that change might have come about, why we would change maintain to monitor? Is it a case of we don't have the authority to maintain?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the function of the work that we do is monitoring those water bodies, so it's just a correction of accuracy.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Madam Mayor. I'm happy to move the officer's recommendation.
Speaker against? Councillor Boglari, question?
Yes, thank you, and I'd like to thank the officers for giving me all these this information in the last couple of days. It's been great, but it's just raised a couple of other clarification points. I'd like on page 5, 2.5.3, when we're talking about the Bayview Conservation Trail, saying it would be completed by the 12th. The actual master plan for this area, I think through you, Madam Mayor, to Gary, I guess, the Bayview Conservation Area master plan is coming back to us on the 18th of November with the Enhancing Visitor Experience program. If we agree to this today to continue going forward, are we actually endorsing that or not? Because I've been...
We're just noting the report, Councillor.
I know, but I've been caught before by noting operational reports, so I now want detail. Thanks.
Through you, Madam Mayor. No, that's not the case at all. The report that will be presented to the next general meeting will be a full detail of the actions proposed out of the master plan for Council's endorsement.
So the work that's being done now, is it out of that master plan?
Partly, yes.
So we're proceeding with the master plan before it's come to Council?
The master plan has already been before Council. This is some additional work that we're proposing through additions to the master plan, which we're bringing back to Council.
Okay, thank you. On page 9, the Indigenous Cultural Heritage Significant Areas, I know that they're actually covered by the state, but I was just wondering, would it not give some more recognition to these sites if we included an overlay on them in our city plan?
Council, this isn't probably a discussion for an operational plan, noting that the document probably needs to be raised through the other planning discussions and workshops rather than here. I don't think there are officers here that can actually answer that right now. But I'm happy to refer to Louise. This is just an operational plan which has been adopted by Council, and we're basically...
It's a good chance to have a discussion on them, though.
Well, with the greatest respect, Councillor, this isn't the place to have a discussion on these issues. This is about noting the plan and making sure it's on track.
Well, we didn't have a workshop on the operational plan initially before the budget, Councillor. And now's a good time to...
Councillor, we've had plenty of workshops leading up to the budget.
Yeah, we did, but it wasn't one particularly on the operational plan.
Thank you, Councillor. And you have all that information that has been adopted. We're just getting the update. Louise, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The officers advised that these matters are protected under the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Act rather than the planning scheme. So it's a matter really from application of the Act.
And which is a far more senior piece of legislation.
I just thought for local recognition, maybe it's something we can discuss in a city plan workshop coming up then.
That's what I was... Well, I'm
yeah, saying. I just thought it might have been something we could have added in today.
Well, it probably should have been raised when we actually adopted the plan. But any other questions, Councillor?
Just the other one, when it talks about public consultation with the city plan on page 12, 5.1.2, it is noted that we have gone out for longer than the minimum 30 days. But at some stage, I think council...
Is it a question?
Well, I was going to ask, but I realise now I'll be told it has to happen in a workshop, but...
So, councillor, you're here to note a report of the progress of...
Well, it would have been maybe in this report good to also note that perhaps we could extend that time, because a lot of groups are asking
for
that.
You've been here a long time. You don't actually start moving motions from an operational report.
No, but we can include in that
working...
No, I'll bring them up in workshops. Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Yeah, thank you. This is just a point of clarity regarding page 11, dot point 5.2.2. It just refers to phase one of the Birkdale Commonwealth Land Review completed and recently workshopped with council. I had the view that that was not complete. We were looking at some heritage issues on that site, and that they too were part of the ongoing discussion with Air Services Australia. Given that phase one is actually to do with identifying constraints and opportunities on the site, that heritage is a constraint, I thought
so
that was noted.
Councillor, you'll notice that the status is on track, so it's not completed, so there is more work to be done.
It actually says
the status is on track.
Yeah, it says that there. It just says Birkdale Commonwealth Land Review completed and recently workshopped, and it talks about resolution, that there will be further discussion with Air Services Australia. It just doesn't acknowledge the outstanding issues to do with heritage, which was also discussed at that time, and finalisation of phase one allowed us to move into phase two, which is where those findings can then be moved into a more strategic approach to the land use. I think that phase one's not complete. I mentioned that at the workshop and just want to get point of clarity on that.
CEO.
Councillor, as we have spoke to you, it's not actually one is complete and the other. These are major pieces of work. Each feeds into it. You'll see that we have sent out, and it is noted that you share a differing view on the heritage to the peers, which we have spoken about.
Councillor, the CEO has got the floor.
Okay. If I may rephrase that you have requested peer reviews, which we have discussed in here, was unsuccessful, as I understand it, in a notice of motion that was through there, so we are continuing with that. We also have, as you will remember from thing, we've requested the RIC to do the purchasing of that. The process is quite clear and is set out, and this is just a comment on the process. So should you wish to change the approach from officers, I'm happy to await a notice of motion to direct us differently.
I think that there's two separate issues occurring here, Councillor. One is that we have a process going on the Commonwealth land. There's also a notice of motion, which wouldn't be included in the operational plan, because that motion came post the adoption of the operational plan, which is a separate motion altogether. So I think what you need to do is just keep track on... This is still on track, it's not completed, and there's more work to be done. And
so
perhaps take that offline with the relevant officer who's dealing with it to get a more detailed update.
So coming back to the specific... My question was just a point of... correction about it does say here that Birkdale Commonwealth Land Review completed.
And it moves on to phase two.
Councillor, it is as per phase one.
That
was gathering all, if I recall correctly, that was gathering all the information and history of what we had and now we go through to the next phase, which starts to put that together for engagement.
And that's the point of clarity, though. I just think it's very important that as council does not have a heritage strategy, policy, department...
Councillor, now you're talking off topic.
Well, there's no portal through which I can speak on the theme of heritage, and it's important to the site.
Councillor, this is about the operational plan, and it's an item for noting, and it's talking about operational projects that were adopted as part of the last budget process. You do have opportunities, and you have raised it in this chamber many times.
I have.
Is not the appropriate place for you to try to raise that once more. So
it's the final place before phase one is complete.
Phase one is complete, Councillor. You've been told that by the CEO, and it moves on to phase two, which is about the broader Commonwealth land.
I'll continue to take it offline. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions, councillors? Any other speakers against? Excuse me, I'll hand back to Councillor Beard to sum up.
Nothing more to say, Madam Mayor.
I'll put the motion in. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.2.1, I'm going to ask Councillor Beard to present on behalf of Councillor Tolte.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. On behalf of Councillor Tolte.
Sorry?
Why is that? Councillor Tolte sounds in good health to me. I don't know where she is, but she should be able to do that.
Well,
she's part of the meeting.
Yeah, well, I don't, just because she's offline and she's actually been recorded as an apology, I thought it was probably more appropriate that... And that happened last meeting, to my understanding. So I don't know why you would change that process now. What happened last meeting, if I recall, councillors, from what I was told? Councillor
Beard. Thanks, Mayor. On behalf of Councillor Tolley, 11.2.1, I move the officer's recommendation that the council resolves to note the report with regard to delegated authority decisions made under Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications.
So moved by Councillor Beard. Second to that is Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to Councillor Beard?
Yeah, no, Madam Mayor. It's all on report.
Any other questions, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. On to 11.2.2.
Similarly, 11.2.2, the appeals list. It's all in the report, current as October the 19th. I move the officer's recommendation. That is, that council resolves to note the report.
Moved by Councillor Beard. Seconded by Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Beard?
No, Madam Mayor.
Any other questions, comments, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Ogilvie is out of the room. Item 11.2.3. Councillor Beard, I believe you've got an amended motion.
I do, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move an amended motion on item 11.2.3. That is the 38 Pitwin Road South, Capella by Multiple Dwelling by 12. And the alternative motion is one, that council resolves to issue a preliminary approval for the material change of use for multiple dwelling on land described as lot 24 RP 87680 and situated at 38 Pitwin Road, South Capalaba, subject to the following requirements. Provide a revised layout and design that demonstrates compliance with specific outcome S1 of the multiple dwelling code and specific outcome S2.4.3 of the medium density residential code. Alternatively, demonstrate that a revised design and layout complies with the overall outcomes for the multiple dwelling zone and medium density residential zone. And in the advice, this requirement could be achieved by reducing the number of units to meet probable solution P24.3 of the medium density residential zone code. And I think it's on the board.
Thank you. One correction, you just referred to multiple dwelling zone rather than multiple dwelling code.
My apology.
And similarly with medium density residential zone code. So moved by Councillor Beard, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Beard?
Madam Mayor, I've got not much to say, but I believe that there will be some discussion on this particular item. It has been subject to a workshop and some intense discussion.
Thank you, Councillor. Speaker against? Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I have a number of issues with this development application, issues ranging from a communal toilet to be constructed on the southern boundary of the development. The public open space within the complex I don't believe is anywhere near significant enough. The unit complex is sized to suit 9 units, and the development application is for 12. And I'll just read from page 22, one paragraph to explain that. Probable solution 2.3 sets out to achieve a residential density of one dwelling unit per 200 square metres of site area. The subject site is 1,864 square metres. Therefore, a proposal for 9 dwelling units would achieve the nominated density. This proposal is for 12 dwelling units, being a density of one dwelling unit per 155 square metres, which is 3 dwellings above the density identified within the probable solution. 3 times. And we accept that the area was zoned in 2008 for MDR, for townhouse complexes to go through. That's fine. That's what we've got to live with. But we also set a target of 200 square metres per townhouse in these areas. This development application pushes the boundaries too far. One dwelling unit per 155 square metres is just too much. It causes other problems, such as the setbacks to the front should be 6. Instead, this one's 5. The side setback should be 2 metres. Instead, it's 1.5. The side setback on the other side should be 4. Instead, it's 2.5. The rear setback should be 4, but instead it's 2.5. By over-densifying these sites, you create all these other problems with boundary setback reductions, relaxations, and it causes all sorts of problems. You know, this is an issue that we've got and we've discussed many times in relation to the performance-based planning scheme, which is a system that is very, very clear, and there's been a bit of banter out there in the community recently over who's responsible for what is seen to be bad decision-making with developments. This only comes down to a system that the state government enforces us to use, and that's a performance-based planning scheme. We talk about solutions, probable solutions, allowing these developers to push the boundaries too far when it comes to public open space, when it comes to densities, until this is resolved, we're going to continue to get these issues come up. And we've got to make it very, very loud and clear to the state government that we've got to go back into a prescriptive planning situation and get away from the performance-based planning schemes. Otherwise, this stuff that's out in the community at the moment is just going to come back and bite local councils throughout Queensland forever. I'll be voting against it.
Any other speakers for? I'm just going to ask if perhaps Chris can just come forward, because the preliminary approval does actually restate our desire, if I'm correct, the amendment, to meet some of the issues that Councillor Gleeson has outlined. Just come to the Councillor Tolte's seat there. So, and as he's approaching, be aware that there was a motion put to LGAQ in regards to performance-based planning and the issues local government faces in enforcing state legislation and that approach, and looking for a way of actually creating more certainty for everyone involved in regards to planning schemes of the future. So, sorry, Chris, just in regards to the preliminary approval and the amendment, what we are trying to achieve is to come closer to what the expectation was from councillors that in regards to the medium density zone and code.
Obviously, as you'd be aware, we can only assess this application against the legislation that we're given, that we're working under, which is performance-based. Whether we like it or not is irrelevant to this application. The application doesn't comply with the probable solution in relation to density, but our consideration is that it does comply with the specific outcome by providing suitable area on the site for the relevant car parking open space and built form outcomes that the planning scheme is seeking to achieve. So obviously the preliminary approval that's proposed seeks to prescribe the probable solution on this development application. But to do that, you would have to be very clear that it's on a basis that it doesn't comply with a specific outcome and be able to demonstrate that.
So just before you leave the seat, Chris, and you might want to stay for the next one anyway, the preliminary approval doesn't give them an approval until they come closer to what I guess the expectations are of that code.
Sorry, yes. So the preliminary approval doesn't authorise development. They'd have to come back to negotiate the approval to seek a development permit and bring it back to compliance with the relevant item that's identified in the preliminary approval.
Thank you. Councillors, any other discussion or questions on that? Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Chris, I just wanted to ask you, if we approve this proposed motion, what happens after here? Does it go to a delegated authority to make the decision, or does it come back to council as a report?
So they've got a number of options. They can seek a negotiated decision, which comes to council, or they can appeal it directly to the court. Those options are open to the applicant. If it comes back as a negotiated decision to council, council in any case would have the authority to call that application in for a decision by council. So as officers, we use our delegation by leave of council. So if at any time council calls that in, it's a decision made by council.
So if we moved a motion to refuse this today, His only option would be to appeal it, or can he and then come back and negotiate it through? Because I believe Councillor Gleeson has brought up enough reasons for a refusal.
With a refusal, the only option is to take it to the court.
Can I just clarify that?
Councillor Rigby?
Take it to court, but there'll be pre-court mediation, and then potentially that could come to an agreement before it even hits the court. That's what happens normally.
Yes, sorry, they'd have to file it in court, but there is a process of mediation without prejudice meetings before it actually goes to a hearing. Yes.
Can I just also check with the officers on that point? Obviously, we run these things past our legal team as well, and I know there's another case that, you know, where the legal advice is taken on board by officers when they make these recommendations. Sorry, Chris, it's more of a statement than a question, I apologise, but obviously, you know, there's two ways. You can either try to get the outcome before engaging experts, and this sends a very strong message. Obviously, this area is intended for some density. It's right near a shopping centre, etc. It's walking distance to transport. What we're saying is that we don't disagree through a preliminary approval. We don't disagree with the overall intent. We just disagree with the detail of which they've put forward, which reflects what Councillor Gleeson was saying, was that slightly, more units, less parking than what we would expect. So this will send a strong message from them, from us to them, in regards to what we're looking for. So either way, there's an opportunity for it to go to court. Okay, councillors, any other questions? Oh, sorry, Wendy, Councillor Boglari.
Thank you. Look, I always respect what the divisional councillor says, because they know the area better than ever. But also, as the mayor just said, there is an intent in this area for higher density living close to the shopping centre. I'm happy for us to, I don't like things going to court, if we can negotiate with them, but I just want to make sure it comes back to council. So the divisional councillor does have that chance then, if it's all pulled back into what does comply. Is there any way we can just add that there to make sure that it isn't under delegated authority, that it comes back to council?
We'd make sure that it came back to council. It wouldn't be decided by a delegate.
It definitely wouldn't be delegated. It would definitely come back to council after negotiations.
This is a decision made by council in this respect, if it's resolved. So we would bring this back to council for a decision.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, can I say something?
Councillor Tolte.
Oh, I just wanted to note for councillors that although this is more units for the site than what the 1 per 200 requires, and I support the motion, I don't support them going outside their setbacks, and I don't support the bathrooms being on the boundary. Having 12 two-bedroom or 11 two-bedroom units and one three-bedroom unit gives them a total bedroom load of 25 bedrooms across the site. And if they were to do 9 three-bedrooms, we'd have 2 extra bedrooms. But because of the way it's configured, they actually end up with 2 less bedrooms and 3.75 more car spaces than they otherwise would. So having less units isn't necessarily a better outcome, but certainly getting the setbacks and keeping the bathrooms off the boundaries, I think, is worth pursuing.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Ogilvie will take a comment.
Has the councillor got grounds for refusal prepared? Should this vote motion go down?
Council, we discussed this yesterday, and it was decided amongst all councillors that we would try to strengthen up the preliminary approval in this discussion. So the councillor has gone away, as you would be aware, and he sent that through. He went to the office.
Sorry, this is Councillor Gleeson's motion. Is that right? Sorry, I was out of the room.
Well, we discussed it as a group yesterday at our pre-general meeting, and it was a preliminary approval that was required as a result of that discussion, which the officers assisted with to ensure that we could strengthen the process. Thank you. Councillor Hewlett.
Just a question, Madam Mayor. I thought when we publicised the motion on the public website that we had to come forward with that and then offer an alternative one. Is this the first motion being put forward? I thought that was a matter
Councillor,
of...
Councillor, we moved the amended motion.
Yeah, I know, but...
That's what we do several times in this chamber, which is why we have a meeting. We talk about it prior to here so we can actually get that consensus from all councillors. which we did yesterday. Councillor, any other discussion, councillors? I'll hand back to Councillor Beard.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Well, it's Groundhog Day, isn't it? Welcome to our nightmare. This has happened, I think, probably every meeting in the last 4 years, hasn't it? And you understand the frustration in the community. You know, we're out for consultation on a new planning scheme, but of course when this was proposed in a planning scheme, I'm quite sure that the adjoining neighbours looked at it and went, okay, well, I can live with that. I can live with one unit per 200 square metres. I can live with those setbacks. And then, of course, they're presented with this and they're understandably frustrated and angry with council and say, why would council even consider this application, let alone approve it? And we've heard from Chris today that, and from Councillor Gleeson, we work within a performance-based planning system which unfortunately doesn't give us the authority to prescribe the outcomes that we and the community expect, and this is simply another case of that. And we've got another one coming up immediately after this. It's something that has to be addressed, and I know that you've taken it forward to the LGAQ, and I know that there's been a good deal of support for it, so I'm looking forward to the state amending their performance-based planning schemes. Having said that, I move the officer's recommendation.
As amended.
Sorry, the amended Thank recommendation.
You. So, councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? So the motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Ogilvy, Councillor Boglari. Those against? Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Elliott. Thank you. Moving on to item 11.2.4, councillors. So, Councillor Beard, would you present that on behalf of Councillor Tolte, please?
Here we go again.
Just look, just before we continue with this item, I'll get you to move it second at first. Sorry, you go.
Item 11.2.4, a combined MCU for a healthcare centre and refreshment establishment. It hasn't given me the address here, but it's on the corner of Old Cleveland Road East and it's 680. 689 Old Cleveland Road East. And Madam Mayor, I've got an alternative motion which is very lengthy. I don't know if you want me to read it out. I hope Joyce has got it, can put
yes,
it on
Joyce
the board for
it.
Us. We can all have a look at it.
Councillors, I did read it out, I think, yesterday at our pre-general meeting. Oh, no, it was slightly amended, actually.
It's a very lengthy six-dot point motion.
Do you require it to be read out, councillors?
Only clarification on what the change has been since yesterday.
Well, let's get a seconder to it before we can discuss it.
Councillor Beard has moved it. Seconded. Councillor Edwards. Councillor Beard.
Madam Mayor, this is a proposal for a combined healthcare centre.
Sorry, Councillor, if I just may, before we continue, I'm just going to have noted that obviously the neighbouring property to this is an associate of most of us, and I wanted to just say that though I've known this person for my time in council, that I will and could be perceived as a conflict, certainly vote in the interest of the community. Well, I'm just to be clear on any perceptions, if you'd like to have that noted as well, you're more than welcome to do that.
I believe every councillor would have to do this then, because I believe the owner is our...
Used to be
our ambassador for council, or representative anyway, so...
Honorary, but more so that we've all had
some dealings. So I will remain in the room and vote in the best interests of the community.
Me too, please, Madam Mayor.
Madam Mayor, I don't feel any need to declare an interest in the matter. Okay, are we okay? Everyone's done?
Sure, move on.
Madam Mayor, this is an application for a healthcare and refreshment establishment adjacent to the Horizon Shopping Centre on the corner of Allenby Road and Old Cleveland Road East. And it's an application by two young fellows who I have a great deal of regard for and empathy for what they're trying to achieve. But I think in this case they've had planning advice that has probably just pushed the boundary, in this case, quite a bit too far. In my opinion, this is a considerable overdevelopment of the site. And even given the anomalies of performance-based planning, it still leaves us with a lot of areas of doubt. In particular, the size and scale of the development and the relationship of the size and scale to the parking requirements and the capacity to provide the on-site parking. One of the real anomalies that has come up as a result of the discussions we've had on this is this property sits within a local centre zone of 9,000 square metres and it occupies about one-third of that size. The adjoining Horizons site occupies the remaining 6,000 square metres of the local centre zone, and an anomaly in the planning scheme, it would appear that when assessing the application, officers are required to assess the impact on the entire 9,000 square metres and not specifically on the 3,000 square metres that this application contains. And that's something that we've only discovered when we've been looking at this. It's something that would come up very rarely. It's never come up before in my time in council and probably won't again, but it's something we need to be aware of and we need to perhaps look at in the planning scheme to ensure that we can perhaps strengthen it up. But the biggest issue we've got here is the GFA of this site is roughly the same as the GFA as the adjoining site, although the adjoining site contains twice the land area. In my opinion, it is a considerable overdevelopment of the site. It's going to cause considerable parking deficiency, and we've discussed it on many occasions. The motion before you attempts to address all of the issues that we've raised, and I would look forward to the applicant coming back with an amended design that would meet the requirements of the motion.
Speaker against? And any other questions? I will just answer your question, Councillor Bishop. It's basically, it's as we discussed yesterday, but it is actually being specific about the details going and down. If you read through it, I did send it through this morning, but I appreciate you haven't had a lot of time to read it. But it is as discussed yesterday. Made sure the officers through there glanced at it to make sure it was consistent and achievable. So, Councillor Boglari, is it this speaker against or just a question or comment?
Councillor Beard and I have spoken several times with community as well as a lot of local businesses are going to be impacted by this, and it even says in the report that there will be an impact on those neighbouring businesses, and our planning scheme does state that we should protect our local centres. So I just, again, just need it said very clearly that if we vote for this, because we all know that something will be getting built there, we can't stop that, but is this strong enough to ensure they don't just go ahead, that they definitely have to come back to us, address the planning scheme issues, and it will come back to us again for that vote? I just want a yes or a no.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
I think, just point of clarity there, with the greatest respect, that they could take this to court.
That's what we don't want them to go to court and actually win on what is already, which is what they're proposing now.
Which is why we were very specific about the details of what we want them to try and achieve through the preliminary approval before they get it.
And this is definitely strong enough and will come back to us.
That's not our decision.
No, but I mean, if we vote this way and they don't go to court and we go into negotiations with them, it'll definitely come back to council to vote on and we can... Yep.
As the previous.
Yep. And I just hope that developers out there get the message that there is a planning scheme and we have to abide by it and stick within the boundaries.
One day they
might. Any other comments? Look, I just might add there's three points here that I think Councillor Bid's probably already touched on, and once again, we understand the intent of this area. We're all kind of a little bit surprised how a local area, neighbourhood centre zone or local centre zone, takes care of the whole zone, not just individual properties. I have spoken to the officers in regards to how that will be translated, and we'll have some discussions about better dealing with that in the future. But simply put, the GFA was from an opportunity to work with the already existing commercial development there was going to be a concern and would probably attract a lot of compliance action from council in the future. So it's best that we try and address these as best we can under the performance-based scheme to put these out there now and have the applicants deal with that before we have to be challenged in other parts of the organisation. So I'll hand back to Councillor Beard if there's no further discussion.
No, it's all been said, Madam Mayor, and as I said, I look forward to the applicant coming back with a revised design.
Okay, councillors, I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Oh, sorry, the motion is carried. Is that an against, Councillor Elliott? Okay, so those four are Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Ogilvy, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Williams. Those against is Councillor Elliott. Thank you. Okay, on to item 11.3.1, Councillor Hewlett. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to present for Council's consideration 11.3.1, Renewable Energy Options for Council.
Move, Councillor Hewlett. Seconded, Councillor Beard. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Council consider the options paper renewable energy opportunities for Redland City as attached to the report, and further consider the recommendation to undertake the next step of commissioning a detailed feasibility study and seeking partners that will help deliver the best renewable options, positive returns, and provide future energy resilience for Council and the community.
Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. Any speakers against? Any comments? I believe Councillor Gleeson brought forward, this is a result of a motion that was brought forward that we've had a workshop on. I also understand that there might be a document to be tabled, but I'll go to Councillor Bishop first as comment.
Yes, indeed, a comment. As a result of discussions yesterday, dot point two, and I know that's in the body of the actual report, part of the discussion was to that dot point two refers to Council as a facilitator of community solar. We discussed removing the mention of two specific islands and actually allow that to be a broader, holistic look across the city as how Council may facilitate community involvement in doing what was originally intended with this, which was to reduce costs and hopefully increase sustainability initiatives and produce positive outcomes. And in dot point two, Council using community halls, we're actually looking more broadly and holistically rather than doing studies on each of those properties. We weren't going to proceed with the amount per property to do that study, that we could do that more effectively. And if I could just make a general comment, this specific solar farm or solar opportunity being raised has broadened naturally into some broader understandings and insights into how renewable energy may be of value. It is a fast and rapidly growing and changing industry, and it may well be wise, so that officers don't get caught with bracket creep, for us to ask experts in the field to actually give us some clarity around what are the emerging challenges and opportunities in this space. So rather than going in down any particular path that we may find, that we may actually get a bit of a read from the industry as where our regulators are at and so forth.
I think in response to all the points you raised, that was actually resolved in the discussion yesterday, and certainly on your last point, a feasibility study would actually be ensuring that the industry has input into the discussions that we have and the reports that come back. On the first two points, it was raised and it was agreed that the motion or the recommendation actually does cover those issues, though in the report it does refer to specific islands. It doesn't restrict us having the community solar opportunities across the whole entire city. It's really the motion that will guide the officers today, and so I think that was resolved yesterday, and I'll just get the CEO to confirm that because I'm pretty sure it was the CEO that responded.
No, that is correct. There was an options paper. The recommendation is what guides us and the resolution of Council, and in response, Councillor Bishop, I am comfortable that dot point one actually does do that emerging and feasibility, and that Gary and the team that is doing that, we are looking and speaking very wide across all the emerging technologies and solutions. But again, we can only provide a report on those things which are feasible and are beyond concept. So that's what will come back. But there will be a section in the report around future opportunities.
So I think there's comfort in that. Once again, Councillor Bishop, that your issues have been addressed and understood. Moving over to Councillor Edwards, I believe you wanted to table a document, Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I don't actually wish to table a document. I'd just like to have it understood. It probably doesn't even have to be included. It says in point one, example solar farms, and I'd like to have consideration in that process when you're looking at renewable energies about plasma gasification. And I'd just like to read a little bit of information about what plasma gasification is. It's a technology that's now established itself commercially in Britain, China, Japan, Canada and the US. The technology of plasma gasification does not only produce renewable electricity and other fuels, but it addresses our serious problem of landfill and replaces it with an environmentally friendly, non-toxic treatment of our city's waste. In the near future, we'll be faced with significant costs of upgrading our waste transfer facilities and also the problem of where we can dispose of our rubbish, as we no longer have landfill sites available in Redlands. I believe this is to be the solution to our waste and renewable energy. Plasma gasification is a technology that can break waste down to 1/300th of its original size. This process can safely deal with almost all forms of hazardous and non-hazardous waste by breaking down the matter via a plasma torch and producing a synthetic gas called syngas, which can be used to produce biofuels, synthetic fuels, or to produce hydrogen, or simply as a fuel replacing fossil fuels to generate steam or electricity. The plasma torch consumes very little portion of the total energy available from the feedstock, being the waste, and only uses between 2 and 5% of the energy input, meaning that up to 98% is created as surplus energy. This is a self-sustaining electric power. It's used commercially as a form of waste treatment. The feedstock for plasma waste is most often municipal solid waste and organic waste. Feedstocks may also include biomedical waste and hazmat materials. Plasma processing of waste is ecologically clean. The production of ecologically clean syngas is the standard goal, and any grain slag is used in construction. The main advantages for this waste treatment are its clean destruction of hazardous waste, preventing hazardous waste from reaching landfills, is no harmful emissions of toxic waste. There is some clean alloy slag which can be used as a construction material. Processing of organic waste into combustible syngas for electric power and thermal energy, and production of value-added products such as metals from the slag. Municipal-scale gasification is currently used commercially for waste disposal in 9 locations throughout the world, and sites for gasification facilities are often landfills, where those landfills can be returned to their original states. The US Navy are also now putting a similar system called plasma arc waste destruction systems in their latest generation aircraft carriers. Multiple outputs can produce from a single facility. Heat and steam can be sold, the electricity production can be combined with ethanol or hydrogen production to maximise resources. Hydrogen can be easily produced from syngas by separating it from the carbon and oxygen, while syngas natural gas can be produced by upgrading the methane content of the syngas. In the near future, it's expected that it will be able to power fuel cells with syngas. Liquid fuels can also be produced from syngas through catalytic conversion. Currently, ethanol from gasification costs around 67 Australian cents per litre, and one tonne of waste produces around 380 litres of ethanol, give or take 20%. Cost estimation of ethanol indicates that ethanol could potentially be more profitable than electricity. Gasification is superior to landfill for a number of reasons. First of all, landfills are toxic to the environment due to the production of toxic liquid leachate and methane gases. Landfills must be constructed with expensive liners, drains and monitoring equipment to comply with the regulations. Plasma gasification can convert waste from landfills and create beneficial uses for the material by maximising recycling and cleanly using the rest of the fuel. The objective of gasification is to produce clean gas. The carbon impact of plasma gasification is significantly lower than any other waste treatment method. It is rated to have a negative carbon impact, especially when compared to landfills. It is not burning. It's instant molecular transformation of materials in a closed chamber. I believe this this technology will not only produce renewable, low-cost fuel, but will remove toxic waste from our environment and has the commercial potential to earn additional revenues by processing waste from neighbouring councils. There's none in Australia at the moment. Yesterday I gave out some drawings. There's photos of a Westinghouse make them. They're off the shelf. And whilst it might be a project bigger for ourselves as a council, we probably could consider in conjunction with other councils and perhaps get funding from the state and federals. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. It's good research there. Any other questions, councillors, on the item? I think I'll comment just on that issue. I think that is probably something we might forward through to the council and mayor's Environment Waterways Committee for their consideration, as they're talking about waste management as well at the moment. So there could be a regional solution there. Councillor Gleeson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I always had to hate to follow Councillor Edwards. He certainly is very thorough. Firstly, to acknowledge and thank Councillor Bishop for his comments regarding the intent of this original motion. It is a potentially a fantastic thing for the city, environmentally, financially, for whatever. I think my memory serves me correctly, someone in the room called it a boondoggle. I just don't think, when I talk to the community out there, I don't think anyone else refers it to that. I'll just point out on page 49, this is to invest an amount of $100,000 to do a full feasibility study on it, which takes into consideration items that Councillor Bishop has mentioned. But for my mind, as I've pointed out in the original notice of motion, the main thing I'm interested in is the potential return of return on investment to ratepayers, and I look forward to seeing the results of that. Hopefully it won't take too long.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Any other discussion, councillors? I'll Councillor Ogilvie.
Just to register that I was wrong, I think. I will be voting for it. I think it's a good idea to go down this path. Well done.
No longer a boondoggle. Back to Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I think it's a wonderful initiative. After hearing Mark Edwards' presentation, I'm glad I did biology at school, not chemistry. I'm a big fan of solar power because it's a clean energy. We live in a subtropical climate with heaps of sunshine, and I commend Councillor Gleeson for recommending an investigation of this solar energy initiative that we're doing. So I'm very happy to move the officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.4.1, Councillor Gleeson. The lease renewal to Queensland Police Citizens Welfare Association.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to, before I move it, do I need to declare a conflict of interest? I'm on the management committee at the PCYC and my children play sport there.
Your choice, but you are appointed by council to that position, so there's no need to...
It's a voluntary position appointed by council, so there's no real conflict there.
It's up to your decision, though.
Well, I've done it now anyway. So if I can move item 11.4.1, please, which is a lease renewal to Queensland Police Citizens Welfare Association.
Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gleeson?
Madam Mayor, it's just a simple extension of the lease. There's not a lot to cover there, but I will point out this club... It probably creates one of the biggest bang for our bucks in the city. It caters for over 2,500 children that play a variety of sports and martial arts within the building. It's only a very, very small footprint in comparison to other sporting clubs throughout the city. It operates on a smell of an oily rag, and it's just a fantastic facility for our community.
Any speakers against? Any questions or comments, councillors? Not Councillor Gleeson, you don't no further requirement to speak.
Nothing bad, Madam Mayor.
Put the motion. Those in favour? Those
against?
Aye. Motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.4.2, public utility easement. Councillor Gleeson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move item 11.4.2, which is public utility easement over lot 100 on SP 223094.
So moved by Councillor Gleeson, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Councillor Gleeson, would you like to speak to it?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. This is really just to bring in another water line to increase water pressure in the area for fire services to maintain the pressure that they're required. It goes through state government land and council land. There will be no trees removed for it, as you can see in the diagram. It's slightly curved path, and that is so that it follows a fire trail and trees will be protected. There's really no negative impact on anyone, so I'm happy to commend it.
Any speakers against? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
Motion is carried. Thank you. There is no mayoral minute, so we'll move on to notices of motion. Councillor Edwards, would you like to move the motion as listed on your agenda?
thank you. Item 13.1.1, possible collaboration of opportunities between local aquaculture businesses and private landholders within Redland City as per recorded there before us.
Move, Councillor Edwards. Seconded, Councillor Beard. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Thank you, Madam Mann. I don't think I was alone in believing that our last general meeting was for me. There was some issues raised which caused me some personal concern. But what I'd like to do is talk to this motion, but also give some information which was circulated in an email to councillors, and just to put it on the record. At the 21st of October 2015 general meeting, Councillor Ogilvie moved an urgent item of business without notice, calling for a verbal report to be given today on what actions have been taken to enact the motion previously moved by myself on the aquaculture industry. That briefing was provided later in the day, and council officers were accused of inaction in the media. Let the record show that. Redland Investment Corporation Chief Executive Officer Peter Kelly had met Fish Protect Managing Director Mr John Hugh on 20th August 2015 following a request from Councillor Ogilvie, and Councillor Ogilvie was advised of the meeting about a week later. The meeting with Mr Hugh was a month before the 23rd September general meeting, at which Councillor Ogilvie successfully moved that council officers investigate.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to have this discussion publicly, but frankly it's not relevant to the motion.
Well, Councillor, I think it is basically addressing the motion that was discussed not only when you brought it forward, but also to broaden
discuss it.
Meeting with Mr. Councillor Ogilvie successfully moved that council officers investigate the possible collaboration with Mr. Hughes Enterprise utilising council land and conduct a workshop before December this year. At 4:35pm on the day of the general meeting, Redland City Bulletin website published an article, Redlands Investigates Aquaculture at Indigiscapes, with a photograph of Councillor Ogilvie and Mr. Hugh at what appears to be Council's Runnymede site.
Seriously, the link to the motion is extremely tenuous.
Councillor, I think the motion was brought forward as a result of the previous motion that you had brought. I'll ask Councillor Edwards just to determine that.
I'm trying to link why the current motion that is before me wasn't available for the previous general meeting, which arose about why Councillor Ogilvie wanted to bring an urgent notice of motion to this chamber without taking it offline discussing with officers. The result of Councillor Ogilvie's motion created what I believe is concern for the community about actions taken by the officers of this organisation. And I'd like to set the record straight that actions were taken. I drew public comment from another aquaculture proponent, Mr. Mark Newton, that he too had a proposal for land-based aquaculture utilising council land. The following week, on 2nd of October, Councillor Ogilvie emailed General Manager Louise Rusin, passing on the information from Mr. Hugh regarding Fish Protect. Mr. Rusin advised the same day that the information would be passed on to officers working on the previous week's resolution. On 6th of October, Councillor Ogilvie emailed Ms. Rusin requesting the name of a contact officer be provided to Mr. Hugh for an officer to contact Mr. Hugh. Ms. Rusin advised the same day that Doug Hunt was the contact and that he would be asked to contact Mr. Hugh. Ms. Rusin has advised that there has been no direct emails since from Mr. Hugh or follow-up questions from Councillor Ogilvie. In the meantime, officers were contacted by Mr. Newton, who requested that an officer meet with himself and the state government officials about his aquaculture proposal. A meeting was attended on the 14th of October. At the next general meeting on 21st of October, Councillor Ogilvie raised his urgent business without notice, requesting a verbal update regarding his motion of the 23rd of September. That was provided at the Mayor and Councillor meeting immediately following the general meeting, with advice that attempts by Mr. Hunt to contact Mr. Hugh had resulted in messages and missed calls between the two parties. The officers also advised of the meeting with Mr. Newton. Mr. Hugh was contacted that afternoon and a meeting scheduled for Monday, 26th of October. Councils were advised by email on Thursday, 22nd of October at 5:50pm. On 22nd of October, an article appeared on the Redland City Bulletin website at 1:34pm titled CEO Flounders Over Aquaculture, reporting that officers told Councillor Ogilvie at 5pm on the day of the general meeting that they had unsuccessfully tried to contact Fish Protect. At the 26th of October meeting with Mr. Hugh, Mr. Hunt and Officer Frank Pierce were advised that he was acting on behalf of the Adelaide-based owner of the trademark for the technology and system he was proposing, and a briefing note was prepared as part of the workshop presentation. A workshop has since been booked with councillors for the 16th of November in keeping with a resolution of council at which officers will present their recommendation that council investigate options for possible collaboration between local agricultural businesses, private landowners and council. It should be noted that Councillor Ogilvie was quoted in the media as saying that the matter was urgent as the investor is not patient. That is not relevant to council's operations. It should also be noted that Fish Protect is a profit-driven enterprise and as such council officers are obliged to approach any dealings with objectivity and impartiality to ensure transparency and fairness in council's support of business under council's open for business philosophy. The motion before us today broadens the scope to investigate opportunities to collaboratively work with a broader local agricultural businesses and opportunities to utilise a variety of land holdings. It will investigate partnership options, economic development and local employment opportunities. I have not drafted this motion in isolation. I advise senior officers of the intent I was trying to achieve, and working with officers, this motion was drafted in such a way that it provides them clarity and a time frame that they believe they can deliver on with the resources available. I was aware that this engagement process was risking my ability to have this motion available for the last general meeting. However, I believe it is more important to have clarity and timeframes that can be met. And I was also aware that officers were already engaged in the process and that this motion being discussed today has not had any adverse impact on work already underway. I thank the officers for their assistance.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Speaker against motion? Speaker against, Councillor Ogilvie? Comment?
Comment, Madam Chair. I'd like to speak for the motion, actually. So, I mean, first thing, I just want to address some of the things that were raised. I don't think they're relevant to the motion, but I just want to reply to some of them. The first was that, I raised some issues, and I guess the intent of the comment is to sort of somehow paint my asking the questions in council as having been politically motivated or intending to have embarrassed somebody. If people cast their minds back to the last general meeting, I wanted to ask a simple question. I just wanted to ask where it was at. And if someone had said to me, don't have the information at hand, happy to talk about it, find out for you and get it to you after the meeting, I would have been happy with that. But unfortunately, I was told I wasn't allowed to ask a question. So therefore, I then moved a motion, an urgent motion without notice. Having moved an urgent business without notice motion, I then had to justify why it was urgent business without notice motion. Now, had I not been put through that process, had we had a more cooperative approach to our engagement in this room rather than a combative approach to our engagement in this room, it could have gone through the keeper really quite easily and we could have resolved it that afternoon.
Okay, now.
However, moving on, going back to the circumstances, this fellow, I spoke to this motion now a month ago. At the time I said I'm agnostic about aquaculture solutions in this city and I'm happy for anybody to be involved, and in fact I would prefer that all sorts of people were involved because we want to get an aquaculture industry in this city, but that we needed to get on the front foot and talk with this guy because he was moving fast. Now, moving fast means in commercial terms not organise a meeting a month later. Now, you might say, yeah, it's, you know, from a council point of view, people's commercial interests are neither here nor there to us. I mean, as a nicety, maybe you're right. But from a practical point of view, you want this guy here in the city. You want him investing. You want him to be the forerunner of an industry. You want him to be, as he has indicated he is willing to do, educating the rest of the city or other people who may be interested in this sort of industry on the table, in here, the next day, if possible, and involved. Now, you know, I don't want to be... I'll leave that point. I don't want to make it seem any more embarrassing than it is. But the truth is, we didn't get a meeting organised with the guy until a month later. That's the net upshot of various.
Sorry, councillor. I think if you look at the time frame, there was actually a meeting in August, if I recall. I don't have the time frame in front of me. There was a meeting prior to you bringing
Madam
that
Chair, motion.
Chair,
the meeting came the Monday after the general meeting where I arranged my urgent business without motion, a month later. That was when the... No. There was a phone call, maybe two phone calls made, during the month that led up to the meeting. Correct me if I'm wrong. The point I'm making here, though, is if this was urgent, which it was, you would expect the guy would have been called five times before 5 o'clock, at least a couple of times the next week.
Councillor.
He wasn't.
Are you, Councillor, I'm going to stop you there. We can talk to the motion now. We're not no, serious. You've had your opportunity last week. Let me make very...
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, I'm now irrelevant. I'm not being relevant to the motion. That's kind of humorous. But anyway,
Councillor, you've made moving your point. On. You've made your point. There was a timeline read out. I'll respond accordingly once you've spoken to the motion.
Okay. Moving on to the substance of the motion. As I've said previously, an aquaculture industry is an absolutely great fit for this area for a number of reasons. Can provide jobs, it's high tech, it's potentially a utilisation of lands that are currently sterilised by economic circumstances, and I would say that this is, when I got that motion from that, got that email from that fella on the Southern Moreton Bay Islands, who is, by the way, proposing an open water aquaculture solution, which is completely different to tank-based aquaculture, and has its own risks and probably won't even involve us very much as a regulator because it's a state government issue. Moreton Bay, the environmental health of Moreton Bay is more their bag rather than ours. But that is exciting stuff. This is exciting stuff. We are starting to see a ball rolling downhill on an industry that can bring great benefits to the city. We should support this strongly. At the moment, we have no plays in our economic development bag other than construction and service industries. We need other stuff. This is one of the things that can deliver.
Any other comments or questions, councillors? I'm just going to make a couple of... I am going to make a couple of points. Firstly, there is no need for any councillor in this room to raise a question in a formal general meeting before picking up the phone to either the CEO or to the mayor and asking for a progress report. Can I just go back to the notice of motion where... Let me understand this, because I haven't got the motion in front of me right now, but we were told that it was a local business. We had no discussion prior to this notice of motion coming to council, despite what people are now saying, or some are saying, was urgent. And I would have thought any urgency would have maybe demonstrated a phone call to an officer, to the mayor, to say, why hasn't this been responded to? I knew nothing of it. I don't know the CEO knew anything of it till the notice
of motion.
Or even,
Madam Chair, can I ask a question? And I'll get it to you after the meeting. That too would have been just as sufficient as a phone call, wouldn't it?
That's right, Councillor. And you did not.
Which is what I attempted to do, Madam Chair.
Well,
I was shut down.
I wasn't here at that meeting, but you could have actually raised that prior to the meeting with the officer at any time. Just remind you that the motion that I recall. Thank you. No. Actually, the most you talked about a cooperative approach, Councillor, and let me talk about a cooperative approach. When a notice of motion comes to councillors with little or no information, I don't consider that to be a cooperative approach. I don't know how other councillors feel.
A motion that had 12 days' notice and had links to various online articles on the industry.
Thank you. You consider it to be so urgent that at no time did you speak to the CEO or myself.
Madam Chair, I was forced to make an urgent...
Thank you, Councillor. I have the floor right now. You've had your opportunity. You took no time to speak to anybody around this table. You told us it was about a local business. We had to make that decision on the run. The notice of motion you put forward, Councillor, was to have a workshop by December. And yet it was urgent last general meeting. So I think talking about cooperative approach, it's a two-way street, Councillor Ogilvie, and I think the notice of motion was poorly written, was poorly understood, and officers did do their best, and you could have just probably called Louise Rassan, Doug Hunt, or the CEO to get that question prior to the meeting. But it is what it is. We now have a motion.
I'd like to move a put motion, if I may.
Yeah. Councillor Bishop is moving a put motion. Councillors, that's a procedural motion. I'll put the...
Do I need to give grounds? I'm more than happy to.
No, Councillors, if you put the put motion, that's fine. If you're happy to do that, I'll put the motion, Councillors. Those in favour of Councillor Edwards' motion... Say aye.
Aye.
Put motion, pardon me. Yep. Those in favour.
Aye.
Put motion. Okay, so that's for that's lost. Those four the put motion. Councillor Bishop, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari, and Councillor Williams. Oh, sorry, Councillor Tolte, pardon me. Those against the put motion. Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Williams. Thank you. So, councillors, I'm just asking that if people are expecting a cooperative approach, it's two.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I'd like to now.
Madam Chair.
No, councillor, I'm going to move back to councillor. What's your point of order, councillor?
Just this discussion is so irrelevant to the motion that it's just kind of embarrassing that you would consider that it is relevant to the motion.
Thank you, councillor. Well, I would suggest that the way you approached it the last general meeting might have been the same. Thank you, councillor. I'm chairing the meeting. Councillor Beard.
Madam, just to clarify, because I actually chaired the meeting in question, and I've only chaired half a dozen general meetings since I've been in council, so I don't claim to be an expert in the job. But on the agenda, we don't have a question and answer segment. We don't have questions to officers. We had a section which is called urgent business without notice. And Councillor Ogilvie asked Councillor Edwards about his urgent business without notice that he expected to come to the meeting. Councillor Edwards responded by saying it's not ready, it'll come to the next meeting.
Because of standing orders.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Councillor Ogilvie then wanted to debate his motion previously. And so, because I regarded as the chair of the meeting that we didn't have a question and answer segment, I couldn't debate or discuss a motion that wasn't before us. And so I made that decision, whether that was right or wrong, it was the decision I made at the time, given the best information I had. If I was wrong, I was wrong, but that's how it came about. It wasn't an intention to shut down discussion. We don't have, as far as I'm concerned, we can't discuss a motion that's not before
us. Councillor, the standing orders set out urgent notice without motion without notice. And I would probably agree that it wasn't. We were having a workshop on this issue anyway in December. So look, going back to the motion, I think it's a great opportunity, despite the shenanigans that have gone on in the last couple of meetings and motions. It is a great opportunity for us to look at opportunities for not only local employment but innovation, and broadly look at that. And I would also like to suggest that in future that we have opportunities to have the broader discussions with officers and with councillors in regards to such notices of motion that could have such significant impacts on our economy. And I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards with his motion to sum up.
I'd just simply like to say that I recommend to support the motion.
Thank you. Councillors, with that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Ogilvie, your next item that you want to be present for.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I move the motion, I'd just like to declare that I have a conflict of interest in the motion. I have never taken developer donations myself, but obviously this will affect me in some way or another should it be enacted, and so I just wanted to clear a conflict of interest.
That's so noted.
Nobody else wants to declare one. That's fine.
Thank you, Councillor.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to ask for an adjournment of 5 minutes so that we can have a discussion about the requirements. That's okay. I'm putting putting a motion. It's procedural. It's not a procedural motion. I've asked for adjournment of 5 minutes. Moved. Seconded. Councillor Gleeson, those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried.
Just for clarity, Madam Chair, what's the purpose?
I'm just moving. I'd just like to have a discussion about with officers in regards to potential conflicts for every single person around this room, considering your conflict. So I've got support for that adjournment for 5 minutes, councillors. So those in favour were Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard.
Can we clear the gallery?
Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Williams, those against an adjournment. Yes. Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari. Thank you. So what I might do, councillors, and people, members of the gallery, after 5 minutes so that we can make sure that councillors aren't going to be compromised by the recent statement of a conflict of interest. If you wouldn't mind just vacating the chambers for 5 minutes so we can just make sure that councillors are aware of their responsibilities and obligations. Thank you. Councillors, you've been given some advice in regards to indirect campaign donations as well. So just as it may be perceived, and I'm sure it will be perceived by some at least, I will declare a conflict of interest as well, as the fact that I've had indirect campaign donations and I've made no excuse. My register has been publicly available since 2012. So that's my conflict noted, councillors. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I'd like to declare a conflict. I don't know why. I didn't receive any money. I funded my own campaign, but I'll declare it just in case this thing goes.
Just bearing in mind that indirect campaign donations is everything from someone handing out under the New South Wales legislation to it's very, very broad. That's what the advice was just given to you. So, Councillor Hardman.
Yeah, I will.
Yes, it was, Councillor. The CEO made that very clear. Indirect campaign donations under the New South Wales legislation is very broad. So if someone borrowed you a photocopier or used someone else's photocopy or a letter folding machine or someone handed out for you, that could be declared or perceived as an indirect campaign donation. So, Councillor Hardman?
Yes, under the advice that we were just given, that I will declare a perceived conflict of interest in this matter, but I'm happy to stay in the room and vote in the best interest of our community.
I'd just like to acknowledge that human beings donated time to my campaign.
Are you going to just declare a conflict of interest?
I'd like to declare a perceived conflict of interest that volunteer hours of individuals and their contribution to my campaign may well be perceived as a conflict of interest by some.
Thank you. Councillor Bolglari?
Mine will be the same. I had volunteers who helped me, so there could be a perceived conflict of interest.
Thank you, Councillor Bolglari. Councillor Edwards?
I don't know why, but I probably have got a conceived conflict of interest because I paid for all my campaigning and only family and friends handed out for me, but maybe those friends are involved in something I don't know, so perceived conflict of interest.
Councillor Beard?
I won't be declaring a conflict of interest, Madam Mayor. I have no idea what this discussion is about. It's absolute rubbish. This is not a retrospective motion.
Thank you,
you
Councillor.
Work within the legislation.
I'm not
that's
asking you to
you.
Talk. I'm not talking. You're not talking to the motion at this point in time. Councillor Elliott?
Yes, thanks, Councillor.
So, okay. Councillor Hewlett?
Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Ogilvie? I'd
like to move the motion, Madam Chair.
Moved by Councillor Ogilvie, seconded by Councillor Bolglari. May I talk to it, Councillor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today I move a motion, I think, one of the most important motions that I have moved in this place in 12 years. It's a motion that Council write to the State Government expressing support for changes to the Local Government Electoral Act that would A, put a cap on political donations and B, stop developers making political donations if they were to take our advice. I have moved this motion because I believe Council needs to take a vote and take a stand on this important issue. The Courier Mail recently reported that the State Government was going to consider these issues. The State Government has said that they will do this review after the High Court confirmed in mid-October that New South Wales legislation that bans developer donations at both state and local level and puts caps on donations at state level is valid. It has been reported that New South Wales Premier Mike Baird has flagged that he will raise this issue at the next Council of Australian Government discussions. It would be nice to have a uniformity of laws across the country and at every level of government. So our input is timely, valid and important, and I hope that we will be one of the first councils in the country to voluntarily argue for donations reform. When forming an opinion about political donations, you need to ask yourself a few questions. Do you think that developers make large donations to campaigns because they have a keen interest in local government, or do you think they do it for business reasons?
Point of order, Madam Mayor. Who are we asking? Are we asking the developers this question? What's the purpose of this direction that Councillor Ogilvie is taking?
Do you think, I'm asking yourself to ask yourself this question, Councillor Gleeson, do you think, and others in the room to ask themselves the question, that candidates who have big marketing budgets have an advantage in election campaigns? Do you think that candidates who have received campaign donations might favour a donor? Do you think that governments should have the community's interest in mind when making decisions? And the fifth question I'd like you to ask yourself is, do you think that everyone has one vote and equal impact on government decisions? The High Court of Australia recently asked itself these questions, and they had a clear-cut response that should give confidence to all governments that they can be bold in changing the way campaigns are financed. The High Court was asked to consider an appeal against the New South Wales legislation from a property developer who argued that the laws prevented him from making political donations infringed his political freedom of speech. In other words, that his rights to free the court then ruled on whether his rights to free speech were outweighed by the importance of integrity in government. The court voted 7-0 that the laws were not only constitutional but desirable. As the High Court summarised, and I'm quoting here, the public interest in removing the risk and perception of corruption is evident. These are provisions which support and enhance equality of access to government and the system of representative government. The restrictions on the freedom is more than balanced by the benefits sought to be achieved. Two important phrases in that quote. The public interest in removing the risk and perception of corruption is evident. The second phrase. These are provisions which support and enhance equality of access to government. I want to read from the judgment on the first issue of removing the risk and perception of corruption because it says it all better than I can. The court said, there are different kinds of corruption. A candidate for office may be tempted to bargain with a wealthy donor to exercise his or her power in office for the benefit of the donor in return for financial assistance with the election campaign. This kind of corruption has been described as quid pro quo corruption. Another more subtle kind of corruption concerns the danger that office holders will decide issues not on the merits or the desires of their constituencies, but according to the wishes of those who have made large financial donor contributions. This kind of corruption is described as clientelism. It arises from an office holder's dependence on the financial support of a wealthy patron to a degree that is apt to compromise the expectation fundamental to representative democracy that public power will be exercised in the public interest. The particular concern is that reliance by political candidates on private patronage may over time become so necessary as to sap the vitality as well as the integrity of the political branches of government. End of quote.
That's healthier up to 6 minutes.
I hope you'll give me...
I'm not giving you a lot more, Councillor.
It's an important issue, I would suggest, Madam Chair.
That's right, and there's more debate to be had. So
the court judgment also goes into a lot of detail on the second point, namely that large donations give donors great access and voice in government. As Griffith Law School professors Graham Orr put it, this is all about the grand principle of an equal opportunity for equal voice for all, the idea of one person, one vote. The New South Wales legislation also bans donations from gambling and tobacco companies. And you may well say, why is this perversion of decision-making only an issue when it comes to these industries? Why isn't it an issue for business groups, unions, green groups, others who want to influence the debate? They are not prevented by legislation from donating to political campaigns. The answer the High Court gave is that the size of the money to be made from development, tobacco and gambling, and the importance of the decisions of government to making money are what distinguishes these industries and make it necessary to prevent them from corrupting our governance. The New South Government has talked about hundreds of millions of dollars that ride on the decisions of government on a daily basis in the development industry. Reading from the judgment again.
60 seconds, Councillor. You've had 7 minutes now.
Madam Chair, I would have thought that this is...
Chair's rule. Thank you.
I agree. The chair is going to shut down one of the most important...
With the greatest respect, you didn't speak to any councillors outside of this meeting about what you were discussing, so we have that opportunity. You have 1 minute.
Madam Chair, no councillor has asked me to talk about it in any forum
that
we've had,
yesterday,
including our pre-meeting.
Thank
no councillor wanted to discuss
thank
it then.
Thank you, councillor. You have 1 minute.
Madam Chair, that's ridiculous, and I think you'll find yourself on the wrong side of public opinion for making a ruling that this speech should be truncated.
The standing orders are very, very clear, and you've had a copy of those for a period of time. You know that the standing orders allow for 5 minutes, so you have 1 minute from this point, 11:18.
Madam Chair, New South Wales, the reading from the court judgment again, New South Wales submits that the decree of dependence of property developers on decisions of government about matters such as the zoning of land and development approvals distinguishes them from actors in other sectors of the economy. Property developers are sufficiently distinct to warrant specific regulation in light of the nature of their business activities and the nature of the public powers which they might seek to influence in their self-industry, as history in New South Wales, and I would add Queensland, shows. These submissions of New South Wales should be accepted. High Court. Councillors, it's obvious, isn't it? You don't need the High Court to tell you that there is a problem here. Common sense and raw experience scream at me that these laws need to be enacted in Queensland. In my opinion, developer donations are cancerous. Donations are a lever which enable developers to bias the system. Nobody believes developers make donations because they have a passion for local government democracy. They donate to people who will be favourable to their interests. And because the system already guarantees certainty in most development decisions, in fact, favours most developers in decisions, it is only the developers who are involved in controversial projects on the fringes who donate. It appears that the riskier the project and the more money that can be made, the more likely a developer will resort to making political donations to get their project over the line. The larger the project, the more resources they are prepared to commit. This is an incredibly important problem for Australia. Bad planning and development decisions cost the country billions of dollars. Bad planning costs our environment, our health, and in wasteful spending on infrastructure. Anyone who argues that we need to continue to allow developers to fund elections because the alternative is that the public will have to pay for elections has no understanding of how much the public is paying for bad planning and bad development decisions. In my 12 years in council, the most divisive issues have been controversial planning decisions. The 2004 to 2008 council operated under a cloud. The so-called second six were...
Councillor, that's enough. I'm cackling that. You've now had 10 minutes and it's no longer are you talking to the motion. Now you're trying to create some aspersions across other councillors and councils. I've given you enough opportunity to sum up. I'm leaving it at that. Thank you. You have spoken to the motion very, very adequately. That's fine. But I will remind you that you are speaking to the motion as required by standing orders, and you won't be dragging other opportunities to talk about other council laws or councils and your view and opinion, which it is only, at how they operated. Speaker against, Councillor Edwards.
I'd actually like to propose an amendment to the motion.
And your amendment, Councillor?
I think Joyce has got it there to bring up. I'll read it. The Council resolves to write to the State Government requesting an investigation into legislative provisions that prohibit all political donations for government campaigns and for all candidates to be publicly funded in similar terms under the Electoral Reform Amendment Bill 2013.
That's the amendment that's been put forward, Councillors, seconded by Councillor Beard. Would you like to speak to it? The amendment, Councillor?
Madam Chair, it's not a point of order. That amendment is not consistent with the intent of the original motion.
I think it's, I'll take some advice, but it's writing to the state under similar terms, but just asking they extend it across all areas. Captain Nick?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Standing Orders Section 10 states an amendment to a motion must A, be in terms which retain the general intent of the original motion, and B, not negate the motion. It is for a decision of the councillors present as to whether those two apply.
It doesn't negate the motion.
Point of order, Madam Chair. My motion talks about a cap on donations. This motion talks about prohibiting donations. Mm. Clearly one is at odds with the other.
I'll take advice from councillors. I believe it's consistent with the motion, councillors. Those in favour?
Aye. Hi.
Oh, sorry. I'm just trying to work out whether this will be accepted as an amendment before we talk to it. Just all those in favour of it?
Aye.
One, two. Okay, so that we have support for it being consistent as an amendment. It doesn't negate the motion. It allows that still to occur.
Motion of dissent in the chair, Madam Chair.
In the term,
that's well, hilarious. Hilarious.
Well, Councillor, just to...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
I'll put that motion, the motion of dissent in the chair. Those in favour? It's not carried, Councillor. Thank you. I'll just take that vote. The dissent motion was Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari. Those who voted against that was Councillor Gleeson, Beard, Edwards, Hardman and Williams. Thank you. So I've taken...
And me.
Councillor Tolte. I've just taken advice from councillors whether they think this amendment is consistent with the terms in the standing orders. And so now we're talking to the amendment. Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This amendment removes all interest groups from the political funding process. The original motion, I believe, is to prejudice one section of the community when we should be looking to remove undue influence from all areas of the community, including well-organised self-interest groups. Councillors are often lobbied by self-interest groups to support them, which is appropriate from any sector of our community. However, prejudice could be perceived if these groups provide election funding and assistance. I'd also comment, however, that the existing protocols of declaring a conflict of interest and removing oneself from the chamber appears to be an effective process. I believe that we either have a position where all sectors of the community have equal rights in engaging in the political process and that any conflicts of interest be declared as per the present system, or we remove the right to donate for political campaigns across the board so that everybody is treated equally and not create prejudice. The French writer Voltaire wrote, "Prejudices are what fools use for reason." In excluding all campaign donations, we're acting fairly, transparently and honestly. For a potential candidate to self-fund an electoral campaign would bring a financial burden, and that would risk losing a potential effective representatives based on wealth. In 1840, when Sydney City Council was established, only men who possessed £1,000 worth of property were able to stand for an election, and that is something that we must avoid. This amended motion presents publicly funded reimbursement of a set amount to be determined per vote received, provided the candidate received a set percentage of the primary vote. An example of this would be that the candidate for a local election achieved a primary vote of a certain percentage, they would receive a small payment per vote, with reimbursement not exceeding their actual costs. It does not remove anybody in the community to lobby candidates, but removes the obligation that financial assistance creates. And I should probably say that I believe that as councillors, our electoral funding needs are considerably less than state or federal. And so the level of influence, we're not necessarily talking about large companies or developers. We could be influenced by much smaller interest groups within the community. I must admit I'm quite happy with the current system because I think it works well. And we've seen that work well in these chambers over the past few years. I don't have problems with that. But if you don't think it's working well and you want a different system, I think this system where nobody contributes and you get a reimbursement of your costs through the state is a much better one.
Speaker against?
Just clarification on that. Previously in our discussion, we were told that people even handing out for us could be considered a donation in kind.
Under the New South Wales legislation.
Yep, so under this motion, with this changing of wording, all donations is there. Is that, would that also then include people handing out for us? Because we better go postal vote really quickly then.
Councillor, if I may, I was the one in the adjournment that was quoted. If you read the legislation, it is quite clear and actually describes indirect donations in the legislation as related to those three, so that's what it was about. If you look at the Electoral Reform Amendment Bill, I believe it would have definitions in there around those. So remember, this is, my comment was in relation to the three parties that Councillor Ogilvie named under the New South Wales Electoral Act, and that is what that definition is there. What the state chooses or federally chooses to include in bills is their choice. So I was giving merely an interpretation on that, and based on the fact, should you declare a conflict of interest. And that ruling and that act was actually sent around by act by UNCA.
So that advice was given in reference to your conflicts of interest.
So it wouldn't be included in that? I'm just... All political donations, I'd need a definition on what that actually covers. Because if it...
And in kind.
And in kind, which would be people handing out.
It's only a letter.
We're writing to the state to ask them to investigate those provisions according to this. Councillor Beard.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Look, I'm agreeing with Councillor Edwards with regard to, I don't believe the system's broke. And I'm suggesting be careful what you wish for with this particular resolution. Let's not beat around the bush. There's only one person in the room who's this going to affect, and that's the Mayor. Our campaigns are relatively inexpensive, and most of us can find the money to fund our own campaigns, as I've been doing, and all of us around the room have done. It only affects the Mayor. Now, the Mayor has declared donations from different businesses around the city.
922 people.
Well, different businesses, well. And in every occasion, when an item has come before us that the Mayor has had a conflict of interest, she's declared it, left the room. And I'll sign a stat deck. Now, I'm the Deputy Mayor. I work pretty closely with the Mayor.
Is that you, Julie?
Yeah, sorry, the phone dropped out.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Talty.
Thank you. Just to reiterate, I don't believe the system's broke. On every occasion when an item has come before Council that the Mayor has had a perceived conflict, she's excluded herself from the debate. You can't be any fairer than that. And as I said, as Deputy Mayor, I work very closely with the Mayor, and I'll sign a stat deck now that says on not one single occasion in the past 3.5 years has the Mayor ever attempted to influence me to vote in any way on any issue. She has never, Councillor Boglary, be very careful with that sort of groaning. I'll sign a stat deck now that not on one single occasion has the Mayor ever tried to influence my vote. Therefore, the system is not broke. However, when I said be careful what you wish for, if this motion is successful and the state does actually ban all political donations and that donations are funded by the publicly funded, who do you think that public might be? In the case of state elections, it won't be taxpayers, it'll be ratepayers. And I don't think that the ratepayers of Redland City are going to be too thrilled about funding our elections. And so I'm saying be careful what you wish for. I'm going to support that amended motion, but I have grave resolutions about it, and I want to go on record as having said the system is not broke.
Have we got a speaker for the motion? Comment, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Look, regardless of what side of the fence you sit on, we're all aware of community groups that are well campaigned and that fundraise to influence the results of elections in this council area. So whether it's the first or the second motion, I'm sceptical either of them are really the right way to go. I think all it's going to do is drive money underground into these secret squirrel business community groups that tie themselves into the election campaigns. The only thing is the way it sits at the moment, we know who donated money after the election is declared.
Prior
to the election. Whereas down this path, we won't know who these faceless groups are. It's just, we'll have no clue at all where their integrity lies or where their influences are. If anything, the only thing I would change is maybe a requirement to bring the declaration of donations forward to within a 48-hour period so people can see in real time as the election period goes through that 6 weeks. People can see exactly who's getting what where, and they're well informed before the election.
Comment, Councillor Elliott.
This is flawed, Mayor. I just find that the... I know you've had six councillors vote for this to be the motion, but, you know, nowhere in Councillor Ogilvie's thing had said anything about publicly funding. Like, if we're going to allow this to continue, there'll be all sorts of funny motions put up by whoever's holding the floor at the time. I just find it bizarre. I didn't think it was such a big deal, the first one, really. And I've got nothing to hide. But this one here, as Councillor Beard's alluded to, you know, you're opening up something I don't think was even in the discussion. You know, we've shifted discussion from apples to oranges, and just six councils agreed. I just find that bizarre. I think you're really on the sticky paper doing these sort of tricks.
Well, Councillor, I look at the standing orders, and I read the standing orders, and I've asked advice from the officers and to make sure there was clarity that we thought this amendment was in line with the original motion. We're not actually debating that at the moment, by the way. We are debating the current motion.
That means you can come in and you can just say, we're going to pay everybody, you know, $60 a vote or something like that, and six people can go, yeah, that's fine. And go, what? You know, we're shifting the whole thing. We've shifted the whole thing to this thing, which is nowhere near that. If you don't want to vote for that up the top, fine. Put up a notice of motion next time. But this has got no... This has got half of it's wrong. You know, like half of it is not in the top one. You know, we're just shifting ground.
So would you like to would you suggest an amendment to the amendment, Councillor, and take out some of the public funding
elements?
You can
take out all four candidates to be publicly funded. You know, that wasn't even suggested, and now it's sort of like, let's have another an amendment and we'll take that out, and suddenly it'll be just the last bit, you know?
Councillor Edwards, would you be happy to have that element removed as your amendment?
I'd be...
In similar terms under... Sorry. Okay.
Madam Mayor, this brings us back to that thorny problem that we have in the standing orders, that where an amendment to a motion is before a meeting, no other amendment to the motion can be considered until after the first amendment has been put. The caveat to that is that some minor changes to words to ensure that its intent is better understood without changing the meaning of the amended motion is permitted with the approval of the person who proposed the amendment.
I think that's it.
To me, minor
that wasn't a minor amendment. That was a whole new piece. This in a... You're actually, you know, that is...
We've already voted on this.
Councillor, yeah, we're not talking about the amendment anymore.
You're really sort of out there doing this. You're corrupting the whole
Councillor.
Motion system by introducing new information that wasn't even in the original one. To put in for all candidates to be publicly funded, that wasn't even mentioned.
Well, I'm asking...
And that's not a minor amendment. That is a major amendment to the motion.
We're writing a letter to the state, Councillor, in regards to electoral provisions.
You're missing the law. It says a minor amendment, and you're just going, "Ah, no, that's fine." Well, you know,
the standing orders, Councillor, it doesn't negate the motion.
Let's put in the mayor be publicly elected from council.
It doesn't negate it. It still allows us. Thank you, Councillor. It still allows us to write to the state.
But
it still allows us to
deal
with the electoral provisions.
That doesn't mean it's right. You're missing the whole point. The whole point is the minor amendment. It was a minor amendment, ain't to put a whole new paragraph in. What?
The motion's not about writing to the state.
Thank you, Councillor.
It's about
capping donations and preventing
some from making it.
That's
about banning donations.
Well, it's banning some. So I'll get the CEO to comment to your comments. Thank you, councillors. You're through the chair. Thank you.
Councillors, I'm just going to read the standing orders, which you should all be aware of. Item 10, I know you've already voted on it. An amendment to a motion must, as our General Manager of Organisational Services said, A, be in terms in which retain the general intent of the original motion, and B, does not negate the motion. And then it goes on, item 2, not more than one motion or one proposed amendment to a motion may be put before a meeting at any one time. 3, where an amendment to a motion is before a meeting, no other amendment to the motion can be considered until after the first amendment has been put. The amendment motion with the proposer's approval may have some minor changes to the word to ensure that its intent is better understood without changing the meaning of the amended. So that is talking about the amended motion. Where a motion, the original motion, is amended by another motion, the other motion, the original motion must not be put to a subsequent motion to amend the other motion. A councillor who proposes or seconds a motion must not propose a second and amendment to the motion. So then it goes through about speaking. So that is the wordings in our standing orders.
So, councillors, we're back to the amended motion that's been supported. Sure, Councillor O'Gwee.
Madam Chair, the reason for speaking against the motion is that this whole situation that has been raised by Councillor Beard has been considered by not only the New South Wales Government, by the High Court. So the issue here is providing the right balance between political freedom of speech and people who are biasing the system and corrupting governance. And, you know, the whole argument about preserving that political freedom of speech is still intact. It's not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to donate. What they're saying is that you don't want donations of a size or significance or from an industry sector that it's going to bias the system against the one voice, one vote type thing. So although it's kind of admirable, the idea of banning all donations, the problem with that is that, yes, you then end up with a completely publicly funded election. And if you reduce or put a cap on donations to the point where people are able to run campaigns without having to dip into the public purse, keeping in mind that state and federal government already has a system for publicly funded elections, then you get the right balance between freedom of speech and the one voice, one vote thing. Now, if you go down this path, then you've unbalanced the argument. Political freedom of speech goes out the window. And that's why no one has touched it here or in America. So what I'd suggest to you is, as admirable as it might be to kind of clear the decks of all influence, there is an important issue here, which is getting the balance between both.
Any other comments? Councillor Bishop? Told you I'll come to you in a minute, Councillor Bishop.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I too would like to just acknowledge my concern about the change from the motion to the amended motion. I don't see the connection, and I do believe that there is a fundamental point of interest that could be clarified by writing that letter and asking that previous point, which I don't believe is fully touched on with the amendment. But coming to the point of why, first of all, 2 weeks ago, in fact, it was, I think the cut-off day is 12 days prior to this meeting when a notice of motion needs to be raised. 12 days ago was the opportunity to commence the discussions. The fact that we are in this situation now with a majority of people...
Councillor, you're speaking against the motion?
I'm making a point,
no,
if I may.
Standing orders
I'm
require
speaking,
you to speak against the motion if you say you're going to do that, Councillor.
I'm just making an observation,
well,
and both points...
You need to speak against the motion.
Are you want to debate that?
Councillor, no, I'm going to refer you to the standing orders where you're actually required to speak against it, not to other items.
I was making a comment.
Yeah, but you need to speak against the motion as you said you would. The motion in front of you.
Well, the point that I'm trying to make is both motions raise the question, why do we need to consider political donations and the impact that they can have on candidates? In electoral representative democracy, which is what we operate under, a phenomenal system, the robust independence of individuals is critical. For there to be campaign funds that go to candidates, whether they be individuals or a series of individuals, is anathema to a free, independent and politically unbiased system. For Councillor Beard to have suggested that at no point has he been influenced by the Mayor, or for that matter any other councillor, is to actually misunderstand what democracy is about. We are to influence one another. And for him to have some assumption that his approach to knowing how he's going to vote on an issue and not be prepared to change his mind and not have you change his mind is fundamentally disrespectful.
Order, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
It's a clear misunderstanding of what I intended to say, and I think everybody in the room is clear about what I intended to say.
Okay. Well,
which brings me to the point of what brings me to the point of why we need to ask the question: why are political donations a concern? And they are a concern because they interpolate and interfere with the robust, independent actions of a group of people. 12 days ago, there was an opportunity for any of the individuals to raise their point of concern about the notice of motion. What we've arrived at here is an elected bunch of and majority of councillors who've come to a consensus view that's totally anathema to what the original motion was. Now, that suggests to me a form of alignment around certain values, whether they're expressed or not, that is exactly why freedom of speech and among independent councillors needs to be maintained, and I believe
an amendment, councillor.
You're talking around it, you're not talking to it.
I'm speaking about fundamentally why freedom of speech is critical.
We actually got
an amendment that's asking us to write to the government in regards to political donations being banned.
And is there a reason why we would like to write to the government about that?
Because we had a notice of motion.
We're now in a situation where a majority of councillors consistently vote in a way that is interpreting.
Standing orders require you to stop speaking. Councillor, your second warning.
Thank you.
We had a notice of motion that was put to council via the standing orders as required, and that is what we're debating. Thank you. Now, you've had your opportunity to speak against this particular amended motion.
There is an elephant in this room that's been here for a long
Councillor,
time.
Councillor, that's enough. You are now starting to cast aspersions, and I'm going to refer you to
I'm continuing to.
Okay, that's... Okay, Councillor, that's enough. No more. Thank you. No, Councillor, you've had plenty of opportunity to speak against this. Chambers require you to have a set of rules that everyone has an equal opportunity to live by. And you're required to speak to and against motions as set out in the standing orders. It is the liberty of the Chair to allow you to go and digress and speak for longer. At this point in time, you have hardly spoken against the amended motion. Now, I know you don't think that that's the right way to handle things, but this is a standing order that has been adopted by Council, and I'm asking you, just like everyone else has to live by them, that you do so.
I started with a comment.
Yeah, but that's not required under the standing orders. You're required to speak for or against the motion. Like in any chamber of local government, state government or federal government, that may not be your way of doing things, but you are required to live by those rules just like everybody else, with the greatest respect. So you were asked to speak against the motion, and now you've had your opportunity. You've had 5 minutes plus, and you haven't spoken against the motion. You've spoken around it and also alluded to other areas, which I think is probably going a little too far according to those standing orders as well. So with that...
Interpretation of the Chair.
Well, it's not actually. It's the interpretation and the rules set out by standing orders, which I ask you and I remind you about constantly,
as
Councillor.
As interpreted by the Chair.
Councillor, no, as understood by councillors.
Madam Mayor, can I move to put motion, please?
No. I had before. Councillor Tolte.
I just wanted to note that I'm supporting Councillor Edwards' amended motion. But all this talk about 12 days of notice for a motion. There's also protocols and understandings between councillors about asking for support when they want to bring a motion forward that is of their own making, and no steps were taken whatsoever for any collaborative work, as far as I'm aware, by Councillor Ogilvie. And I would suggest, had he done that, I would have been able to ask him to look into the fact that Queensland Planning Law and Queensland Local Government are completely different in their structure and their regulation to that of New South Wales. And I don't think under Queensland Planning Regulation, as pretty much everyone in the community is designated at some point as being a developer, even if they want to apply to bring down some trees or build a dam, he wouldn't be able to prevent the participation in elections from the perspective of every person who's a developer, because that is every person.
Councillor told
including
you, including
himself.
Councillor told you, I'm going to pull you up because you're not speaking to the amended motion
at
now,
point
either.
Of order, Madam
so
Chair.
I've ruled that.
The New South Wales legislation
okay,
doesn't
that's
define
fine. Thanks, Madam.
Thank you.
To conclude those people.
Thank you, Councillor. You don't have the floor at the moment. Just, Councillor, I'm going to hand back to Councillor Edwards. But before, just to clear the record, I think it's really important that I personally feel that this has been an opportunity to put on record that I had over 900 people donate to my campaign. I made no question about that. I've been completely transparent. Whatever the state decides as legislation, I will do, just as I do by abiding most times, at least, to, you know, traffic speeds, etc., on the road. I will live within that legislation. If this in any way has been an attempt to further, attack the integrity of people who try to do the right thing and the 922 people or so that actually donated to my campaign, then I do very, very much feel sorry for them, because they simply wanted to invest, in the outcome of their local government area in a way that would be in the community's interest. So, unfortunately, it's come to this, but let's put on record that my declarations have been out there since 2012, January 2012, for this particular election campaign and anything prior to that. I've never made an excuse in regards to that. I've always been upfront and transparent, and I refer to a fact that the councillor actually wanted to have me in the room for this discussion. And that was put in an email to all of us. So unlike the fact that Councillor Tolte has just raised the fact that we've had opportunities to speak to it, there was time for any councillor who's got any concern about the behaviour of any other councillor and their integrity in this room to make that approach directly to them in a collaborative fashion, as has been discussed in previous items in here. For the 922 people that might have donated to my campaign, if the legislation says that in future they can't, they won't. But I do remind people that as a mayor, any candidate that wants to run for mayor, you have a much greater area to cover, as big as the federal electorate. So it will be a challenge for anyone who wants to run for mayor in the future if there are no political donations or no public funding. It will only allow some people in our community to have the privilege of serving their community. So I think that's the issue that we have with the motion, but we're writing to the state to ask for that, and in that respect I will be supporting Councillor Edwards' motion, and I will be living within the legislation as I always have. Councillor Edwards, I'll hand back to you to sum up.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As I said when I introduced this amendment, that I actually support the current process because I think it's working well. If we're going to change it, I don't think that the motion that Councillor Ogilvie brought for is adequate for a council of this size. There is undue influence that could be perceived from other groups in the community who provide funding. I think that the intent of what Councillor Ogilvie wants to do is admirable, and I think it probably deserves a lot further discussion and being workshopped and discussed amongst all councillors to have an outcome that would be productive and have a chance to actually get up. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to note the concerns, and I'm going to vote against my amendment. And what I'm suggesting is that gives us an opportunity during a mayor council meeting for us to all get together and work out what we actually want in a letter that satisfies most of us. Because obviously there hasn't been enough engagement in this process. I'm not happy with the motion that Councillor Vogelby brought together because I think it's full of holes. I think the present system is adequate, but if we're going to change it, I think we need to have it a process in which we all engage with each other and come to more consent.
Before you vote, I think you probably need to get some advice on whether or not you can actually vote against a motion that you've put.
Yes, you can.
Yeah,
okay. We need to know too.
If
we revert to the original motion.
No, we don't.
Madam Mayor, for clarity, you can't speak against a motion, but you can vote against it.
As a mover of the motion.
As a mover of the motion, or as a second, or as a mover of a.
Do you revert to the? Do you revert to the original motion?
No. No.
The amended motion becomes the motion.
Yeah. That's right. If you look at the standing orders, it talks about not then if the amended motion doesn't get up, you can't further amend the amended motion back to the original motion.
Point of order, Madam Chair, I think you find the first thing you do is you vote on whether the amendment will become the motion, and then you vote on the motion, or you can vote on the amendment to the motion and be accepted or otherwise, and then you can re-amend the motion, and then that becomes the motion.
If the amended motion is lost, then you can amend the amended motion subsequent to that. That is correct.
Okay, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari. Thank you, councillors. Did I say Councillor Tolte, didn't I?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Checking. Okay, councillors, moves us on to urgent business without notice, of which I haven't been advised of any.
Madam Chair,
moving
I have
on.
Some. Urgent business without notice, it's the motion that's currently laying on the table with regard to the local laws.
I'll let Joyce bring that up, I think. Joyce has got that. Just so councillors are aware that there is an item of the local laws that is actually urgent to be to allow for parking regulation at North Stradbroke Island. So, Councillor Ogilvie, have you obviously got that motion in hand?
Yeah, Madam Chair. It's pretty much the same motion that we've got on page 10, minus dot point 1 and dot point 2. I'll just
take a vote once they've seen it to make sure it's urgent business. Nick?
Technicality, Mayor. The Council's voted for this item to lie on the table. They need to vote to take it off the table. I don't believe it needs to be considered as urgent business because you can bring an item back from the table at the same meeting.
Okay, Councillor Ogilvie, so would you like to move that we take that item
from
the table?
Yep.
So moved. Are those in favour?
But then move the officer's recommendation with an amendment.
I've got to take up the table first. And it's a procedural motion. So just those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. This is in relation, I think, before I put that motion properly, there is an item within the local laws that is urgent. Not the whole item. So we take the item off the table, and I think what Councillor Ogilvie, which is why I want it up on the screen, is proposing, is that we split that motion to allow us to leave part of it to lie on the table. Are we clear? Yeah, well, there was a couple of councillors that weren't sure, so I just wanted to make it really clear. So those who... Sorry, Nick, did you want to respond?
Just, and probably, Madam Mayor, if I may, just for the benefit of the public gallery, if the parking item was brought back to council with the other local law amendment item on the 18th of November, given that council is required under the Local Government Act to consult with the community for a minimum of 21 days, officers could not bring back a report to you on this matter by the date of your last scheduled meeting for this calendar year, the 9th of December. The earliest that we could finish that 21-day consultation period would be actually on the 9th of December. An officer would need a few days to have a look through the comments made and prepare a report for you. So what I'm saying is in relation to the koala matter, which I'm suggesting you leave lying on the table in different wording, but Councillor Ogilvie alerted me with an aside comment, really, when you were dealing with this matter earlier, that there's an expectation that the parking issues are implemented prior to Christmas. That cannot happen unless you give officers some direction today to commence that community consultation with almost immediate effect.
So I'll just confirm that vote on taking the item from the table. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? It's unanimous. Okay. So that item has now been taken from the table. Councillor Ogilvie, would you like to move the motion that you've put forward? An amended motion, yeah.
That's it on the board. It's basically 1, 3, 4 and 5. Commencing immediately. Fantastic. Thank you, Joyce. Train the process around the Junna Street parcel of land and getting some enforcement, hopefully, if this proceeds, with some enforcement in place, potentially for the Christmas period.
So, councillors, are you comfortable with that? Councillor Boglari, yeah? Any further discussion required?
Can I just clarify, as I can't see the motion, that this only relates to the parking?
I'll read it for you, Councillor Tolte. Sorry, I forget that you're in another part of Redlands. The council resolves to propose to make parking amendments subordinate local law number 1/2015, as outlined in the attachment to the original report dated the 7th of October 2015, to enter into an agreement with Stradbroke Ferries Proprietary Limited to enforce the local law provisions about car parking at Dunnet Street, Dunwich, and 3, undertake a 21-day period of community consultation with regard to this proposed subordinate local law amendment commencing immediately. And also that the Council resolves to ask the Chief Executive Officer to bring a report to Council at its next meeting to pursue changes relating to the Animal Management Amendment Subordinate Law, Local Law No. 1/2015, and the development and implementation of a citywide behaviour change program as outlined in the report to Council dated the 7th of October 2015, and with amendments to mapping based upon subsequent consultation with councillors. So that's the motion. We'll need a seconder for that. Councillor Boglari has seconded it. Any further discussion required, councillors?
I would prefer that we just left the other half of the motion lay on the table, not put it down for 2 weeks.
I think she's referring to the animal management element.
Yep.
Well, I guess this will be a direction, though. Do we need to have a date in there, Nick?
That can be rewritten to have that part of the report lie on the table, but it does get a bit messy. My recommendation would be that we, if you don't want to specify the next meeting, just put at a future meeting.
Yeah, if you take the 2 weeks out and just say brought to a future meeting, that's fine. I just want to be sure that we have time to really make sure that the expectation before it comes back again.
Is that? Are you happy to have that just to not?
Through you, I'd like to ask Nick, didn't we need to bring it forward sooner rather than later with going into caretaker mode? I mean, if this is going to actually get through before that time.
Madam Mayor, with a report coming back on the 18th of November, I think it is just possible for you to conduct public consultation on that, on those changes before the main Christmas period starts, but you're already eating into the first week of December, and I think some of the kids probably started holidays by then. The reality is that you would not get a report unless you have a special meeting between the 9th of December and the 28th of January. You wouldn't get a report at which you could formally make the amendment to the subordinate local law until the 28th of January next year. Personal point of view, although you would be able to do that, there's no restriction in the caretaker period from you making those decisions, whether or not it is appropriate for a local government to make amendments to its local laws so close to the election is a matter for you. But certainly, if it comes back on the 18th of November, probably the 28th of January, you'll be able to make a decision. If it comes back to you after the 18th of November, it would certainly be after the election.
Councillors, are you happy for the amendment to be a future meeting rather than next?
Yeah.
Question, Councillor Elliott?
We had a set of maps that was there. We've had the discussion. It's only public consultation. You could go out with it and it'll be back in the Duke in time. And I think to shorten up, to review the maps, we've reviewed the maps and the maps are there. Just go for the public consultation and see what comes back.
Councillor Gleeson?
Madam Mayor, the maps are incorrect. They're not what is described in the report.
So, councillors, I'm in your hands. Do you want it to be a future meeting?
I beg to differ on that because I understood the general manager forwarded the thing. I just haven't got the email, and there was no change from the discussion on the meeting we had. There was no change in anything whatsoever.
Well, I don't agree.
Okay,
sorry, general manager Telty.
So, councillors, we have a motion in front of us. We're just debating the elements of future or next as being the meeting that this will come back to. Can I just get a straw poll to see if people are happy for it to be future, which could be the next meeting, by the way, as well, if it can be resolved.
Future, please.
Okay, so councillors, I think the motion from what the straw poll. Can I just those who want to support next? Yeah. Okay. So the motion is as it stands. Just that's just a was a straw poll, which will bring it back to the next meeting. So that is there any further discussion required, Councillor Ogilvie? Do you need to sum up? I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Beard, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hardman, Councillor Ogilvie, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Tolte. Okay, councillors, we now have an item in confidential, if I recall correctly, unless there's other any other urgent business. I don't believe there is. Councillors, do we want to have move into closed session for? Okay, so I'll need a mover and second that we go into confidential. Moved, Councillor Ogilvie, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The motion is just those in favour.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. If I can just thank you, Judith, and I think the rest of the public have left the gallery. Okay. Put a mover for the motion. Thank you for their officer recommendation. Moved, Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Ogilvie. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. Those against? Councillor Hewlett and Councillor Elliott. I think that concludes our business for today, councillors. I close the meeting at 12:13 and come back at 12:30 for your Mayor Councillor if you want, just to have a quick break.